Roger that, Mike November Tango. Your code 41 acknowledged.
P Division, code 41. P Division, code 41.
McEnroy's Point by Peter Turnbull, dramatized by Stephen Mulrine. McEnroy's Point.
So you didn't touch the body?
No. Apart from lifting her head out of the water, no. The ferry company guy reckoned she could be revived if it was less than 5 minutes since she stopped breathing. So he ran back up to his office to phone.
Can we just get some details, Mr. Wyatt, isn't it? You were intending to board the ferry.
Aye, the one that's just away, that's right. That's my car over there, the blue Honda. I'm in the transport business. Personnel manager for Glasgow Red Ball, if you know them.
I've seen the buses. So, you were down here on business?
No. I've a few days leave to take. The company has a use it or lose it policy, so I thought I'd take a couple of days, go and visit my sister. She lives in Ardentine. She's on her own, same as me. She's a retired primary school teacher. First day at her work, she stands in front of a class full of Waynes and she's Miss Wyatt. 40 years later, her last day at work and she's still Miss Wyatt, teaching Mayor Gran Waynes.
Mr. Wyatt, about the body again. You just moved the head.
Yeah, that's right. I pulled it up out of the water. It's in some state, I tell you. I mean, I'm no pathologist, but that woman had stopped breathing a hell of a lot more than 5 minutes ago. Is it crabs that do that?
Could be fish.
I mean, the mess here, please. It's like it's been chewed.
Well, she's been floating in a Clyde a few days. A shoal of mackerel wouldn't take long to strip a corpse to the bone.
See, you wouldn't think fish would do that. Anyway, I don't think I'll be visiting Rachel now. The thought of fairy cake and tea. No, I'll get back home. I'll give her a phone. She won't be that bothered. God, I just stayed put in the car. I'd have been in Ardentine now. I'd have been reading about this in tomorrow's paper.
Come. Ah, come in, Richard. Sit down. Sorry I'm late. Tailback on the M8.
Busy night?
Not too bad, sir. A couple of car thefts, burglaries. Oh, and the night shift pulled in Mr. Pollock, no less.
They did?
He's in the cells now, cautioned and charged. He was well wedged, about £15,000 on him.
No mention of the rest?
No, sir. He seems to have been buying silence from a lot of people, and that's one expensive commodity. Anyway, our beat cop spotted him walking through the city in the small hours, probably going from one safe house to the next.
I presume his brief's been here?
Oh, yes. He was down here like a flash, 4 a.m, full of his client's rights. You know, sir, what gets me about lawyers is the way they'll fight tooth and nail for people, even when they know they're as guilty as sin.
Yeah, well, it's not Pollock's rights he's after, it's his money. 15,000, you say? No mention of the other 25?
No, sir.
Easy come, easy go. He's only been out of Peterhead a year since his last 10 stretch. Well, I'll go down the cells and have a wee chat with him. Anything else I should know?
Well, there's a file here, sir. It's probably the priority. A woman's body fished out of the Clyde this morning beside the ferry slipway at McEnroy's Point. She'd been in the water a few days. Hamilton and Piper went down and Dr. Chance had a look. I authorised removal of the body to the GRI for Dr. Reynolds' attention.
What do we know so far?
Not much, sir. The body's a bit of a mess. But she's Caucasian, possibly middle-aged, blonde hair, about 5'9 or so.
Is there anybody at the GRI?
No, sir. It came in just at the handover, and it didn't seem to be as urgent as some.
No, fair enough. She's not recently deceased, and there's no telling where the locus might be. Anything suspicious?
Well, a few things, sir. For a start, she wasn't swimming, and I doubt that she fell off a boat. Wrong time of year, and wrong clothes. I should say, sir, she appeared to be in her nightwear, pyjamas and dressing gown, and if it was suicide, I'd expect her to be in her street clothes, even just to get from the house to the water.
Well, I suppose she could have driven like that, but yes, I take your point. Doesn't feel like a suicide. What have we got from missing persons?
Well, sir, the collator came up with two names, going back a couple of weeks, given the state of the body. One's a Sadie Kinnear from the Hag Hill area, about the right age, height, and so on. The other one is a Mrs. Neville. She and her husband are both missing.
Oh, that's interesting.
They were reported on Saturday, and again, the basic details are right, but this lady and her husband live in Gourock.
Gourock?
Yes, sir, that's what I thought. It's just about on the doorstep.
Mm.
And what strikes me, sir, is that if the husband and wife are missing and we found the wife, do we assume that Mr. Neville is floating face down in the Clyde even as we speak?
This is possible, isn't it? Who reported it?
A daughter, apparently. Paid them a routine visit at the weekend, found them gone, no explanation. Anyway, I think we're looking at Mrs. Neville. The other lady, Mrs. Kinnear, failed to return after a trip to the local shops, so she would have been in street clothes.
I think you're right. You're on the day shift, Richard?
Yes, sir. D.S. Sussock and D.C. Abernethy are on the back shift. D.C. Montgomery was just going off nights as I came on.
Oh, yeah. So, what's for action?
Well, we've put out missing persons posters for all three, sir.
Right. I think I'll look in at the GRI. They like a police presence. It's not strictly necessary, but it's a good idea.
Dr. Kay's already got the deceased clothing at Pitt Street, sir.
Right, I'll give her a call. Meanwhile, you could phone the river police. Advise them there's likely to be a floater out there, somewhere off the tail of the bank.
P Division, DC King.
Collator, Mr. King. Your inquiry earlier this morning. I've done a bit more digging. And there's a cross-reference you might be interested in on Mrs. Neville.
Just a sec. Right.
Okay. It might be nothing, but she's the sister-in-law of one Claude Neville.
Claude Neville? That rings a bell.
Doesn't it? Anyway, it wasn't in your patch. It wasn't Stirling. But the papers were full of it, round about July. Old chap, left in his own, died in suspicious circumstances.
And left a huge amount of money, if I remember rightly.
$500,000, give or take.
I know which I'd prefer. Is there any detail?
No. Our first is the cross-affair to Central Police, Claude Neville. Could be nothing.
Well, thanks. That's worth chasing up.
Yes. You might even get a trip to Stirling. Anyway, hang on a sec, there's more. This Neville family seems to have a dark past.
Mm-hmm.
The son committed suicide about 10 years ago. Went for a one-way swim in October. Guess where his body was washed up?
McEnroy's Point?
Got it in one. This is a real can of worms, though. The daughter tried to have a parent charged with murder. Claimed they drove him to take his own life.
The daughter?
Yes. There's actually a statement in the file, but the fiscal just put his pen through it. End of story.
Or maybe the beginning.
I hope you don't mind, Dr. Reynolds. I wouldn't want you to think I'm pushing you for a result.
No, no, not at all. I wouldn't allow myself to be pushed in any case. They say a pathologist is the only doctor whose patients feel no pain. So we're never in a hurry. Or at least we shouldn't be. Do you know much about drowning, Mr. Donahue?
Not a lot, no.
Diatoms.
I'm sorry?
Diatoms. We beasties that live in water. They're the key to it. If you drown, you inhale them, and they find their way into the marrow of the long bones. Of course, that'll establish whether or not you were alive when you took the plunge. At least that was the theory. According to the latest research, we're inhaling diatoms along with the air we breathe, so they might be in the bone marrow anyway. See pathology. See exact science, eh? Well, I'll make a start. You'll need a mask, Mr. Donahue. The alcohol wash cleans off the surface pollutants, but it doesn't quite disguise the smell. Can't be expected to.
You take milk? Aye, it's always nice to get a visit from Big G's finest.
I'm D.S. Cushman, by the way.
D.C. King. Cheers.
So, I'd say to what do we owe the pleasure that I gather from our uniform bag and inquiring about one Claude Neville later this town?
Mm. What can I do for you?
Well, we had a missing persons report on his brother and sister-in-law.
Aye, that's John Neville. I think the wife's name was Charmaine.
Mm. Anyway, we're clearly certain we've found her. We've taken a corpse out of the Clyde at Gourock, very near where they stayed, and we think it's her. What can you tell me about your chap, the brother? I understand you left a lot of money.
Aye, well, Claude Neville was a sort of odd character. I wouldn't want to call him a recluse, because that would give the wrong impression. We didn't socialise. We had a fantastic house. I mean, really beautifully furnished. In the middle of what you and I would call a park. He thought of as his garden. Humble origins, apparently. Brought up in some god awful orphanage, but he certainly made up for it in later life.
And he died in July of this year. Suspicious circumstances?
Aye. High summer. Note, that's one of the circumstances. If you remember the case, his housekeeper found him dead in his bath.
That's right, electrocuted. I remember something from the papers.
Aye, an electric heater in the bath alongside him, plugged in a long lead to stock it out in the hall. I mean, it's common enough. Lots of people take baths in July with electric heaters perched in the soap tray.
Oh, sure. Most natural thing in the world.
That's what we thought. That's as far as we got. The fatal accident inquiry returned an open verdict, so the case remains on file.
I can see why.
The thing was, there was no sign of violence or forced entry. He'd been in the bath a few days. The body was covered with maceration.
Maceration?
Aye, that was a new one in me as well, till I attended the PM. You know the ripple effect you get in your fingers if you soak in the bath?
Mm.
The technical term for it's maceration of the skin. It starts in the fingers after about 20 minutes. As far as Claude Neville was concerned, all the bits of him that were immersed looked like sand dunes in the desert. It'd been like that for about 3 days, the pathologist said. Bathroom was full of flies as well. The cleaning lady said she knew what she was going to find before she even opened the door.
Hmm. Oh, the bathroom door wasn't locked on the inside?
No. Well, there's no need to if you live alone.
Mm. Any theories?
Well, Mr. King, you're asking me to stick my neck out, but I do have my suspicions.
And?
Claude Neville's niece. That's his brother's daughter. Name's Charlotte. All the C's, eh? Anyway, the niece was known to be in the Stirling area around the time of Claude's death. Booked into a hotel room in the town, one night only. But within the 72-hour time frame, the pathologist said the accident had happened.
So she was questioned, obviously.
Aye. She wouldn't say why she was in Stirling, but she could easily have got home to Glasgow, 45-minute drive.
Mm. And he was definitely electrocuted, not drowned.
Aye, no water in the lungs, no bruising. Which she'd have expected if she'd burst into his bathroom, sat in his head till he drowned, and chucked the heater in to muddy the water, so to speak.
And she could have done that?
Oh, sure. Big, raw-boned woman. He was decidedly frail, suffering from some chronic ailment. No, if she did anything, it was to walk into his bathroom with a glowing electric heater and drop it into his lap before he knew what was happening.
You said the cleaning lady discovered him?
Aye, that's right. The niece was highly indignant we had her in the frame at all, said her being in Stirling was pure coincidence, and she'd no possible motive anyway, since she wouldn't stand to benefit from his death.
Who did benefit, as a matter of interest?
Actually, her parents. Claude's brother and sister-in-law. They got around 500,000. There'll be another couple of hundred K once the house is sold.
This time of death?
Aye, we've got 2:30 PM for that, on whichever day, when electric clocks stop when the mains fused.
I can't see somebody walking into the house by chance, just when he was having his bath.
Well, they wouldn't need to. The house is about 6 times the size of Balmoral. Well, that's an exaggeration, but you could easily hide yourself in one of the rooms and just bide your time.
Hmm.
The cleaning lady did say the heater was alien to the locusts.
Brought in for the occasion.
Aye, it was an old appliance, probably bought second hand.
So, the instant that heater hit the water, Charlotte Neville's parents were richer to the tune of about 700K, and now they've disappeared as well.
You know about her brother, of course.
Yeah, she blamed them for his death.
He could do with reopening Ms. Neville's box, I think.
I think so. Where do we find her?
Well, your best bet would probably be your internal telephone book.
Eh?
She's a police officer. D.S. Neville. Female and Child Unit. Q Division.
Well, late 50s, I would say, certainly.
If it's who we think it is, she'll be 63.
Oh, indications are she's been in the water for between 2 to 6 days.
maceration at an advanced level, and face and other parts of the body attacked by marine predators.
You couldn't possibly narrow the time window, Dr. Reynolds.
No, I'm afraid not, Inspector. Not on what we have at the present. Cold water at this time of year would have impeded the rate of decomposition. Build-up of gas has been slow, but the stomach will tell us something. If you'd like to stand back, might switch on that fan just behind you. It's not attar of roses, is it? Well, there's no water in the stomach, so she didn't drown.
Really?
Well, I'll check the lungs, but I'm pretty sure there'll be no water there either.
So, if she didn't drown, what killed her?
Oh, wait a minute. This feels wrong. Right, look, Inspector. See this? A raised line? Didn't spot this at first because antimortem wounds will actually leach into the water. The blood will flow out rather than congeal. I think if we'd found this lady on dry land, her hair would have been a mass of congealed blood. But the sweet waters of the Clyde have cleansed the wound very nicely. Just move the skin back. Ah. Yes. There you are, Inspector. There is your cause of death. Clean fracture of the skull, sort of thing you get from a pickaxe handle, say, wielded with some force. That'll be my finding, I'm pretty sure. Fracture of the skull causing subdural hemorrhaging. Oh, and another wee point. She was tied up.
She was?
Yes, just here. You see? Left ankle. That line all the way round, it's cut quite deep into the flesh. Very likely at the same time as the head wound.
An educated guess.
Well, I'm not one to stick my neck out, but I'd say this lady was served a single pretty hefty blow to the side of the head which killed her outright. She was then dumped in the Clyde with a weight attached to her left ankle. This kept her submerged for a number of days, how many I couldn't say, but she eventually slipped her ankle and floated to the surface.
And if it is Mrs. Neville, then her husband's disappeared as well.
Aye, and the likelihood is he's still down there, still attached to whatever weight was fastened to his limbs. I can't help much with ID right now. Fingerprints are out of the question. Too much maceration. I'll remove the lower jaw, though. Send it to the dental hospital. They might be able to match it against whatever records they have for Mrs. Neville.
Well, if you'll excuse me, Dr. Reynolds, I don't think I'll stay for the next stage.
All right. Suit yourself, Inspector. I'll fax through a full report as soon as I'm done.
Anyway, next day I walked across the road, expecting to find more rubbish. But that's a puzzling thing. There wasn't any. Just an inflatable dinghy, shredded.
Cut up, you mean?
Oh, yes, Sergeant, in tatters. Mind you, inflatables occasionally get caught up in the propellers of a tanker, say, and eventually drift ashore as a mess of rubber. So in a way, I thought nothing of it. Until I heard on the radio about the body being found at McEnroy's Point. And that's when I contacted you.
Well, I'm very pleased you did, Mrs. O'Brien. So, which night was this?
The night of the rainstorm, Friday. I couldn't sleep with the rain drumming on the roof. But it would be about 3 a.m, so Saturday morning, really. Anyway, I heard a van or something pull up on the lay-by, so I got up to take a look. It was a black van, one of those without a side door. And I couldn't see too clearly, but I got the impression of somebody carrying something down to the shore. Something quite bulky.
How many people would you say?
Just the one.
Male or female?
I couldn't be sure. They were certainly in trousers and big enough to be a man. No wee woman in a skirt, that's for sure.
So 4 nights ago, during the heavy rain, if that was a body being carried down to the water...
You're wondering, if a body was put in the water 4 nights ago, could it possibly fetch up at the point a few hundred feet to the west? Well, yes, it could, Sergeant. I don't know if you know much about rivers and such like, but they all have reputations. According to Indian legend, for example, the water at Niagara Falls claims 7 lives every year. And if you drown in Lake Superior between November and when it freezes over, it will keep your body. down here, they say that no matter how long you're in the Clyde, it'll eventually put you back, more or less, where it found you.
And you believe that?
Oh, yes, I do. My late husband was a yachtsman. He'd been sailing these waters most of his life. I used to go out with him, and he always said not to worry if I fell overboard, because he'd always know where to look for my body. With a 32-footer, Swedish-built. That's why we bought this bungalow, in fact, to be close to the sailing. And we could see her from here on one of those moorings.
Those are mooring boys, presumably.
Yes. In summer, there's a yacht on every one of them. They're actually attached to a chain down to some immovable object, like a block of cement. Our mooring chain was fixed to an old locomotive wheel.
They're not that far out, are they?
No, the Clyde shelves very steeply here. Between the yacht club and McEnroy's Point, it's practically vertical. And quite deep, upwards of 100 feet.
So somebody in a rubber dinghy could row out and drop a body overboard without much difficulty. Apart from a rainstorm, that is.
It wasn't really a storm, Sergeant. There was no wind. More like a monsoon. The rain coming straight down like stairboards. But otherwise calm as far as the water was concerned. The torn dinghy was big enough, incidentally, to take an extra body. A four-man design.
And the Clyde might just have returned that body whence it came, you think?
Well, that's what they say, Sergeant. No, Stussock. Off you get. Coffee and toast. We're fresh out of fresh orange. Come on.
Oh, God, what time is it? What time did you get up?
We're due in at work in an hour. Case conference. So don't go back to sleep. Here, take this.
Thanks. Oh, that's good.
No, don't lie back. You'll fall asleep again. Hey, what are you smiling at?
Nothing. Nothing at all. I was just thinking. You know, that's just what a room and kitchen should be. A home for one, and it's just right. Not like the room and kitchen I was brought up in.
I know. You've told me. We were so poor, we had to... What was it again?
Hey, Willems, don't mock.
Well, really, you're getting maudlin in your old age.
Yeah.
And we're due in Donoghue's office at 9. Remember?
Aye. You know your problem, young Willems. You've too much common sense.
So, Richard, what you're suggesting is that this woman meted out a bit of rough justice to her parents, sending them to their death the same way they did with her younger brother.
Well, it's a theory, sir. There's a lot of coincidence otherwise.
And that would explain it. Right. But she also pays a call on her rich uncle in Stirling months before and fries him in his bath to make sure that when she does do away with her parents, it'll be worth her while. Very calculating. Have you quizzed her yet?
No, sir. We still don't have a positive ID on Mrs. Neville.
No, sir. Dr. Reynolds was on the phone. The dental hospital were able to match Mrs. Neville's records.
Oh,
Dr. Reynolds also mentioned other injuries, including a broken arm and several ribs. He's faxing his report through this afternoon.
So the actual blow to the skull seems to have been part of a pretty violent assault.
So it would seem.
Of course, our problem is that the prime suspects are serving police officers.
Yes, I know. And standing orders dictate that I've got to notify the chief superintendent before we take this any further. What do you think, Ray?
I don't think we've any choice, sir.
No, I agree. But, I wonder, can we sit on that positive ID another day? Elka?
Well, fax machines do run out of paper.
So they do. Yes, we can make good use of the time, I think, before our suspect discovers she's got a case to answer. So, if you take a look at this, Ray, I'll pass it to Mr. Findlater as soon as we're finished here. It's a summary of the case and my reasons for suspecting D.S. Neville of having committed murder. It'll be copied to the chief superintendent, of course, as per regulations.
Yes, sir.
And I'll have to notify my opposite number at Q Division as well, but I'll do that by phone. I'll warn him not to say anything to Sergeant Neville, not until we have a search warrant anyway.
Right, sir. So, what's the next move?
Well, Your interview with Mrs. O'Brien sounded promising. I think we'd better get the frogman down there. I'll fix that up now, and DC Abernethy can take over, okay?
That's fine.
Meanwhile, you and I will pay a call to the Neville House, I think, Ray. We'll take Mr. Bothwell with us, do a proper forensic examination.
Right, sir.
And you can give Abernethy a rough outline for the diver.
Well, there's a lay-by just over the road from Mrs. O'Brien's house, and I think I'd start about maybe 30 feet or so outwards from there. Get them to search among the yacht moorings.
Sir, that's bound to attract press interest.
Then Abernethy can stall them. They don't need to know what we're after. Not yet, anyway.
But it's Mr. Neville's body we're looking for now.
Whatever you can find, Abernethy. Don't pick and choose.
It's remarkably clean, sir. You wouldn't expect otherwise, I suppose, this sort of house. But this room in particular...
Look at these bookshelves, sir. You see? The tallest books to the outside and all graded down to another cent.
Obsessive.
Not the sort of room you could relax in for all its luxury.
Nope. It'd be like walking on eggshells. No sign of violence, though. Mr. Bothell?
I think this room's been wiped clean.
What do you mean?
Well, maybe just a hogmanay clean up in October, but the room's been wiped, sir. I'm certain of it. Take a deep breath. Let me know what you smell.
Bleach?
How about you, Sergeant?
Oh, no, I can't smell a thing. Too many cigarettes in my younger days.
Well, I think it's bleach. And if you stand over here, just for the sun catches it, you can see where the cloth's been wiped over the wall.
Oh, yes, you're right. And either a tall person or else standing in a chair. See it, Ray? Here, wide sweep of the arm.
Oh, yeah, that's quite clear.
And just out of curiosity... Poor, Well, this, Ray, see if you can detect the bleach now.
Oh, certainly can. That's quite strong.
You think that might be the murder weapon, sir?
Well, I wouldn't presume. I do wonder why anybody would clean a poker with bleach.
Yes, but the point where the poker handle meets the stem is a good collector. And it's very hard to get rid of blood from these places unless you immerse it in a strong bleach or acid solution.
Bit of inside knowledge.
Possibly.
Anything in the rest of the house?
Well, it's clean and tidy. Obsessively tidy, you might say. But there's no indication of this sort of clean-up anywhere else. One or two things even out of place, like an unwashed mug, for instance, in the kitchen.
Really? Anyway, we know Mrs. Neville died as a result of a very violent attack, possibly carried out in this house, and if that's the case, the lack of forced entry would suggest the victims knew their attacker.
The victims, sir?
Yes, her husband's also missing. We think he's probably at the bottom of the Clyde. Anyway, Mrs. Bothwell, if you'd climb into your space suit and do your stuff.
Right.
And, Ray, I think we'll go next door and chat to the neighbour. I saw the curtains twitch as we walked up the drive. We'll start there.
Yes, sir.
No, I've been in the house 35 years now. Charlotte, the daughter, she was born the same year I moved in, as a wee brother, Charles. He was 7 or 8 years after that.
10, in fact.
Oh, 10 years, was it? I'm getting confused in my old age. Anyway, I'm not sure I know what sort of family they were.
You were on speaking terms, then.
Oh, aye, but we didn't live in and out of each other's houses. Well, they weren't that sociable. I think he was ex-military, long service. That's where he met her, as far as I know. Mm-hmm. The children didn't get an awful lot of leeway, I felt. You know, made to work and keep everything tidy. I mean, as soon as they could lift up a pair of shears, they were set to cutting the hedge, that sort of thing.
Strict upbringing. Getting to be a thing of the past these days.
Oh, for sure. The boy used to get some right hidings from his father, though. And I think the girl was frightened of her mother. Though I don't think she actually hit her. I was very fond of the wee souls, and I was quite often asked to watch them. Whenever she handed them over, it was always, "Now be strict with them, Mrs. Lawrence." And I'd say, "Of course." And then we'd have great fun. Over the years, I built up a toy box for them. And I think they enjoyed coming here.
I'm sure they would.
Aye. You know there was a tragedy in the family a few years back.
Yes, the son committed suicide.
Oh, aye, that was the official verdict. But there's always guilt and blame flying around with these things, isn't there? It was just this time of year, in fact. he waded into the river at McEnroy's Point and swam out till he sank. Didn't announce it, didn't threaten it, just did it. His body was washed up very close to where he went in. But that's what they say about the Clyde, isn't it?
So I've heard.
Anyway, it was only after that I heard Ray's voices in that house. Never before and never since. I well remember sitting in this room with the windows open and hearing Charlotte, the daughter. You killed him. You killed him, she was shouting. Anyway, the verdict was suicide. The family wore black for a week or two and then carried on, polishing the car, cutting the hedge. Aye.
Mrs. Lawrence, can I ask you about more recent events? Did you notice anything at all out of the ordinary at the Neville's house in the last couple of days?
Aye, there was a van.
Huh? What sort of van?
A dark coloured van, about as big as the post office used to collect the mail.
A 1500 width?
Oh, I couldn't tell you. It was a different shape from a post office van, but about the same size.
So what can you tell us about it?
Very little, I'm afraid. But it was parked in a driveway for a few days. It looked really out of place if you knew the family. That's why I noticed, I suppose. I didn't see any movement, though, and the lights came on and went off at the usual times.
You didn't inquire?
No. I mean, you'd go to your neighbour's door if you hear breaking glass or something, but not for just a van in the driveway.
Was Mr. Neville's own car there?
Oh, yes, in its usual place. The van was between it and the pavement.
And you didn't see the Nevilles while the van was there?
No, but not seeing them for 3 or 4 days wasn't unusual.
So, when did you last see them, Mrs. Lunt?
Together as a couple. It'd be a few weeks ago. But she was deadheading some flowers last week. And I saw Mr. Neville, I think, the day before the van appeared in the driveway. The van had gone by Saturday morning. In fact, I think I maybe heard it leaving that night. The rain was keeping me awake. I heard it drive away. But I didn't hear it starting, funnily enough. You see how their driveways are slope? Well, as I say, all I heard was it pulling away from the road.
Well, thank you, Mrs. Lawrence. You've been very helpful. Well, what do you think, Ray?
Jump start?
Aye. In more ways than one.
Still nothing, then?
Nothing. I think we'll have to call off for a while. The tide's getting too strong. Oh, I can put a tune down this afternoon, though. Slack water's about 3 p.m. this time of year. And we'll be able to start diving again about half an hour before that. That'll give us another couple of hours.
I didn't realise it was that complicated.
Well, you're welcome to try. I can kit you out with a wetsuit if you like.
No thanks. You're about blue with the cold yourself.
Watch deep water. Another couple of hours should do it, though. From what I've been told, it's either going to be within a few hundred metres or else it's nowhere.
Sergeant Sussock!
Sarge!
Yeah, what is it?
A few messages here for you, Sarge. Some chap called Mortimer. He's phoned about 6 times this morning while you were down at Greenock.
Mortimer? Let's have a look. You leave a phone number?
It's on there, Sarge. Once you've got your specs on.
Watch it, son. Oh, aye. I'll be one of these financial consultants. How to invest your money so everybody gets a piece. Little does he know, eh? Right, thanks. Look, I'll get round to it. If he calls again, tell him I'm still out.
Okie doke, Sarge.
Right, gentlemen, settle down. Settle down, Montgomery. Okay. Now, I'll try and summarise the case against before we interview Sergeant Neville. She's been informed about her mother, I understand, and we'll be talking to her tomorrow morning. D.S. Sussock and I have gone over the locus with Mr. Bothwell, and we're waiting for his report. You're still with the diving team, Abernethy, I take it?
Yes, sir. Nothing doing so far, and they've had 2 goes at it. And they reckon if there was another body down there, it could be anywhere.
Well, it was only ever an inspired guess, in any case. Right, then. Let's assume Charlotte Neville's our perp, and let's say she murdered her uncle about 6 months ago,
meaning her own parents become extremely rich, inheriting nearly £500,000 plus the Stirling property. She's nursing a grudge against her parents, however, for driving her younger brother to commit suicide, and this we've got witnesses for. So she pays them a call on Wednesday, batters the life out of them with a poker, and then bundles them into the back of a 1,500-weight van hired specially for the purpose.
Do we know anything about the van, sir? I mean, if we knew who'd hired it.
No, Montgomery, I'm afraid not. Unless you'd like to do some checking, see how many firms in the west of Scotland rent out dark-coloured transit.
Is there anything else, sir?
Anyway, the van has an inflatable dinghy in the back, plus weights and wire or rope to attach to the body. She loads them into the van, goes back into the house to sanitize the locus and the murder weapon, we think, with a strong bleach solution. She's a cop, so she'd know that was important. Beefy King, you're looking doubtful.
Yes, I am a bit, sir. I think pretty well anybody would know to use bleach. I mean, if it goes to court, I imagine that's what a lawyer will say.
Yeah, fair point. Anyway, she sanitizes the locust. But she doesn't move immediately. She takes her time, does a thorough job, and keeps the house lights going on and off as normal, possibly with timer switches. Either that or she stays in the house lying low.
We can easily enough check her shifts.
Yeah, indeed. So, she waits for the right time to dispose of the bodies, and it comes like manna from heaven. Three nights later, pitch dark, rainy, and above all, a windless night. Nobody will be about in a night like that, but the Clyde will be like a mill pond. She seizes her opportunity, rolls the van down the drive and jump-starts it, drives along to the spot where her brother took his last swim, dumps the bodies in deep water, cuts up the dinghy and gets shot of the van somewhere. And then on Saturday she pays a routine call on her parents, finds them missing and reports the fact. And she won't even have an alibi.
What do you mean, sir?
Well, she won't. Ray, she's a cop. If she says anything, it'll be OP prove it. Because she'll know how difficult that is. I'd rather have an alibi merchant any day of the week, frankly. The stronger the alibi, the harder it falls. Anyway, we'll see what else Mr. Bothwell can come up with. But the next move's Q Division.
Yes? Chief Inspector Finbutter called me at home last night. You can be sure of our full cooperation, Mr. Donahue. I take it you'll be interviewing Sergeant Neville here.
Yes, sir. I don't think there's any need to move her at this point.
Well, I'll obviously want to be present when you talk to her.
Of course, sir.
You know, I hope your reasoning's sound, Inspector. Sergeant Neville's a very diligent, respected officer. Can't believe she'd be involved in anything like this. She's taken the news about her mother as well as could be expected. But I don't know what this'll do to her.
She is our prime suspect, nonetheless. Perhaps if we spoke informally to her?
No. I think I'd advise her to insist on a peace interview. Properly recorded.
Fine, if that's what she wants. Before we go in, maybe you could tell us about her shift.
She was off duty last week. The last shift was Tuesday back shift, and she didn't start work again until Monday.
So, she wasn't at work during the days in question.
That's right, Inspector.
Okay. Sergeant Neville?
Yes.
Right. I'm going to ask those present to identify themselves. I'm Detective Inspector Donahue, P Division.
Chief Inspector Shade, Q Division.
Detective Sergeant Neville, Q Division.
Thank you. Detective Sergeant Neville, do you wish to be legally represented during this interview?
No, sir.
Sergeant Neville, I understand you've been told about the discovery of your mother's body early yesterday.
Yes.
And you know something of the circumstances.
Well, that she was drowned, yes. What I don't understand is why I wasn't told sooner. And what about my father?
Sergeant Neville, we'll have time to ask questions later. What else do you know about your mother's death?
Nothing. Well, the Chief Inspector told me her body had been washed up beside McEnroy's Point. That's all I know. I have a right to see her, and I don't know why
you... It's all right, Sergeant. Just answer Inspector Donahue's questions. You know your mother was murdered, Sergeant?
Murdered?
Yes. She sustained a fractured skull, among other injuries, before being put into the water.
Oh, God.
I wonder if you can tell us anything about that. Sergeant Neville?
What?
Your mother's murder, Sergeant. What can you tell us?
I don't understand.
Sergeant,
there's...
No, wait a minute. I've just been told my mother's dead, and now I'm being accused of her murder. Is that what this is all about? I don't believe
it. You had a rather strained relationship with your parents.
Is that a question?
All right, yes it is.
Answer the question, Sergeant.
Were you on bad terms with either of your parents?
No.
Is that the truth?
We had our differences. They weren't the easy... We got on all right.
Okay. Let's talk about your uncle, the late Claude Neville. How did you get on with him?
Oh, God, not this again. I've been through all this with Central Police.
You had a good relationship with him?
Yes.
You were a regular caller at his house?
I suppose so. The family kept in touch.
But you wouldn't necessarily stay at his house overnight, for example?
No.
Hardly worth it, so close to Glasgow. Yes?
Yes.
But you have on occasion stayed in a hotel in Stirling.
Oh, Cena. You've been doing your homework, haven't you?
Sergeant Neville.
Answer the question, please.
Yes, I've stayed in a hotel.
And one of those occasions happened to be about the time of your uncle's death in suspicious circumstances.
You know that.
I also know you refused to give Central Police any reason for your presence in Stirling at that time.
As far as I know, Inspector, I wasn't breaking any law.
Did you visit your uncle that week?
I did not.
Really? Isn't that a bit odd? You could easily have looked in on him.
Oh, I could have looked in on him any time. I've told you we kept in touch. Sometimes my father, sometimes my...
Yes, but it's your visits we're interested in. I mean, Stirling's practically just up the road, isn't it? 3/4 of an hour's drive. Yet you booked into a hotel. No surprise Central Police had their suspicions.
And that's all they had, Inspector. Now, if you have anything
more... We're talking about 3 murders now, Sergeant Neville, and that's one hell of a lot of suspicion.
What do you mean, 3 murders?
Your Uncle Claude, your mother, your father's still missing, but we'll find him, you do know that. You also know it's in your own best interest to confess and not prolong this.
Confess? I've got nothing to confess, and if you think you can prove otherwise...
Sergeant Neville, I've known the fiscal to proceed on a lot less than we have.
Like what?
Motive, for a start. Means and opportunity. You were in the immediate area when your uncle was murdered, and make no mistake, we're still looking for his murderer. And all that stood between his money and you, £500,000, Charlotte, was your own mother and father. That's motive enough, I'd say.
Would you? Would you? Would you kill your parents for £500,000?
Inspector, I wonder if we might take a break. It clearly states that an interviewee should be in a fit...
I'm all right, I'm all right.
Okay, Sergeant. Let's talk about your relationship with your parents again. Isn't it true that you blamed them for your brother's suicide?
Yes. I was upset.
Even to the point of wanting your father charged with his murder?
I've told you I was upset. My brother and I were very close. I think my father expected too much of him. My father was a professional soldier, you see. We were army brats. Disciplined, stiff upper lip, everything by numbers. Oh, I've turned out well by my father's standards. But Charlie wasn't particularly clever or ambitious, and he wasn't the kind of man's man my father could respect.
What do you mean by that?
Inspector Donahue, my brother's dead. His life, his short life, is no concern of yours or anybody else's. Let's just say that my father has his death on his conscience and leave it at that.
Oh, but you couldn't, could you, Sergeant Neville? You couldn't leave it at that. You had a score to settle.
I've got over it.
Oh, yes. Time's a great healer, they say. But you've also had time to plan the ultimate revenge, beginning with your uncle's murder, for money. For the £500,000 you now fall heir to with the death of your parents, and that process started, I believe, with that hotel reservation in Stirling, which you can't and won't explain.
Inspector Donahue, I wonder, can we take a break here? I know Sergeant Neville hasn't requested it, but I feel she should have the opportunity to reconsider her position on legal representation.
No, I don't need...
I think she needs some time on her own.
But if she's already... All right. If you think it's necessary.
Thank you.
Okay, interview terminated at the request of Chief Inspector Shade at 0952.
Right. We'll leave you here for a few minutes, Sergeant Neville. Would you like a coffee?
Please.
We'll go along to my office, Inspector. Resume in what, about 10 minutes?
Fine.
Sergeant Sussel.
Yeah, Sergeant Foley.
Sorry, Sergeant. I can't stall this guy any longer. He says he's been leaving messages all over the place and nobody calls him back.
God, the financial consultant. Has he seen me?
Afraid so. That's him over there, in the grey suit.
Yeah, and the eager expression, surprise, surprise. Oh, I'd better see him. What's his name?
Mortimer. A Mr. Roy Mortimer.
Right.
Mr. Mortimer.
A patient man.
Can I come in?
You didn't need to bring the coffee in yourself.
Donna, who's in my office? I can't stay.
No.
Lottie, we need to talk. I can't let you go through this on your own. You've got to tell him.
No, I can't. You know what it'll do to you.
I don't care. For God's sake, Lottie, you've got to stop him now, and it's the only way. You have to tell him.
If the worst comes to the worst.
This is the worst. You've got to.
Yeah, sorry it's taking so long, Mr. Mortimer, but we are very busy right now. Have a seat, please.
I can't give you much time, I'm afraid. I'm not really into all that investment, etc. My life's a bit too complicated at present.
Oh, no, Mr. Sussex. I'm not here on business. Well, not in that sense. I'm not going to try and sell you a pension plan. Actually, I think I have some information on this missing person case that's been in the papers.
Oh?
This Charles Neville, I think the name is.
Would you like a cup of coffee, Mr. Mortimer?
I wouldn't mind.
Right. Hello, WPC Willems? Yeah. How would you like to join me with a pot of coffee and 3 cups? Eh? Yes, of course you have to bring them in. Thank you. Now then, Mr. Mortimer, what's your connection with Charles Neville?
Right, interview resumed at 10:10 a.m. Present in the room are Detective Sergeant Neville, Chief Inspector Shade, Detective Inspector Donahue. Now, Sergeant Neville, these visits to Stirling, I get the impression that while you may have been on good terms with your uncle, this was not a particularly close family.
Would I be right?
I wouldn't say that. I'm not sure what you mean by close.
Could it be that you went there to observe your uncle's movements, to get his watchdogs accustomed to you, to check out the cleaning lady's comings and goings?
No, that's absolutely untrue.
This won't go away, Sergeant. Do you know that?
Sergeant Neville.
All right. I wasn't in Stirling to visit my uncle.
Sergeant, we already know that. At the time of his death, you were booked into the Wallace Hotel by sheer chance, as you would have us believe, in the same small town under an hour's drive from Glasgow.
That was the whole point, if you must know. I can walk through the centre of Stirling and never see anybody I know. Any Glaswegian can. It was perfect.
I don't understand.
All right, all right. 2 Glaswegians, both serving police officers. Do you get the picture? 2 serving officers, one of them married, a married man with a family in a very senior position.
Sergeant Neville, are you telling me that you were having an affair? You were meeting someone in Stirling and you were with this man in the Wallace Hotel at the time of your uncle's death?
Yes.
Are you willing to identify him?
No. You take sugar, Mr. Mortimer?
No, thank you. This is fine.
So, you're sure this is the same man?
Absolutely. The photograph on the poster was very clear, and it's quite a distinctive face. That's Charles McRae, I'm sure of it. Oh, that isn't his wife, though. She's a much younger woman. French-Canadian, at least that's what she told me.
You met her?
Oh, yes. They live in Ottawa, apparently. You see, my bank is Canadian, First National Bank of Alberta. We mainly deal with company accounts, but we do have a few individual clients with a minimum deposit of £1,000.
That's the minimum?
Yes, small savers aren't really worth our overheads.
Well, that rules me out, then.
Mr. Mortimer, this Mr. McRae, as you know him, is he one of these clients?
Yes. He opened an account with us about 2 years ago, deposited £1,000 and just let it lie. We don't offer favourable interest rates. Most of our clients need a dollar account, either US or Canadian, and ready access, so it's low interest and company accounts in the main.
I see. You know, Mr. Mortimer, I get the feeling there's more to this than the poster. Am I right?
Well, a few months ago, Mr. McCrae suddenly became a regular depositor. Virtually every week, large amounts drawn from several different building societies. Sometimes he came in alone, other times with his wife.
Is he a French-Canadian?
West of Scotland accent, though. Anyway, over a very short time, Mr. McCrae deposited nearly £500,000 with us.
Didn't that seem suspicious?
Well, we're not a high street bank. We don't question our customers as closely as they do. And we're quite used to large sums dealing with companies.
But not with individuals?
No. So a couple of days ago, I arrive at work to find an overnight fax from our branch in Ottawa, requesting that Mr. McCrae's money be wired to them as he and his wife are now resident in Ottawa. It's very remiss of me, I know, but it was only then that I started to do some checking. I mean, it didn't add up. Our interest rate is less than inflation, a good deal less. Why on earth would anybody lodge £500,000 in an account with virtually no growth?
Be as well keeping it under the mattress.
Exactly.
So, what's the explanation, do you think?
I think it's a very clumsy attempt to launder money. Ill-gotten gains, most likely. Well, as you can imagine, I was a bit puzzled. So I started checking, as I say, and the trail took me through practically every building society in Scotland. He had an account in each of them, all in the name of Charles McCrae. And he was moving the money in batches of 20,000 or 30,000 at a time by cheque. And he incidentally left £10 in each account as he emptied it. I dare say because that was less trouble than closing it.
And you traced all these?
Well, I'm a wee bit of a bloodhound, really. And to cut a long story short, I eventually found the original source.
And?
The Clydesdale Bank in Gourock. An account in the names of Charles and Charmaine Neville. Checks drawn on that account were paid into the Fourth Valley Building Society to one Charles McCrae.
Now resident in Ottawa.
Of course. These checks and all the others were made payable to McCrae and signed by Charles Neville. Anyway, when I noticed that poster and saw the face of somebody I knew as McCrae being named as Charles Neville, a missing person, well, that just confirmed my suspicions. Something wasn't right.
No, and that's putting it mildly. Mr. Mortimer, I wish you'd caught up with me sooner.
Well, I know you're a busy man, Sergeant.
It might have saved us some time, and certainly some embarrassment.
Ray, I think you ought to call the inspector at Q Division, don't you?
Oh, God, aye, before any charges are read.
You'd better do it now.
Yeah. Mr. Mortimer, you wouldn't happen to have a home address for our friend in Ottawa, would you?
I thought you'd want that.
Elka?
Sergeant, we're going round in circles here. You know as well as I do we'll get there in the end. You must give us a name.
I can't do that.
You'd go to prison rather than tell us who you were instilling with.
It won't come to that. I'm innocent, that's what matters. He'll come forward if he has to. I know he will. But I don't want that, not yet.
Come in.
Sorry to disturb you, Inspector, but there's a phone call for D.I. Donoghue.
From Peterhead?
A Detective Sergeant Sussex.
Yes, that's one of my team.
It said it was very urgent.
Possibly the missing...
Yes, I'll take it. Right, interview terminated 10:48 a.m.
That's in train now, sir. WPC Williams phoned Ottawa, faxed them the details and a photograph. We didn't think it was a good idea to wait.
In view of the time difference, sir, before he left for work.
Or the golf course, more likely. And they'll respond as soon as they've anything for us.
Yes, sir.
Well, I don't mind admitting I wish we'd seen your man Mortimer sooner.
My fault, sir.
It's not having to apologise to Sergeant Neville, it's what we put her through. And that doesn't get any better, does it?
Hardly. I think it's obvious her father would have let her take the rap. He maybe even knew she was instilling when he dropped that fire into his brother's bath. I presume it was him.
I should think it's a certainty. Long-term plan.
A sleeper account in this bank nearly 2 years before he has the money to fill it.
Can you imagine anything more calculated?
Probably started hatching at the minute he decided he would trade in his wife for this younger woman. After that, the murder of his brother. Brother, for God's sake! And his wife, they were just stepping stones to a new life in Canada. Yes. I take it we've stood down the frogman.
Yes, sir. D.C. Abernethy's already done that.
Missing person. Missing with intent.
That could be Ottawa now, sir.
The wonders of technology. I hope you've got paper in this thing.
Wasn't that how they got Dr. Crippen, sir? Transatlantic cable.
Uh-huh.
Sir?
Sure it wasn't the Mounties you phoned?
In McEnroy's Point, the part of P.C. Hamilton was played by Martin McCarthy, P.C. Piper by Paul Sampson, D.I. Donahue by Crawford Logan, and D.C. King by Liam Brennan. The Desk Sergeant by Jim Twaddale, Dr. Reynolds by Paul Young, D.S. Cushman by Ian Agnew, and Mrs. O'Brien by Catherine Connolly. D.S. Sussex by Jake Darcy, W.P.C. Elka Willems by Eliza Langland, Abernethy by Andrew Conlon, and Elliot Bothwell by David Goodall. Mrs. Lawrence was played by Wilma Duncan, D.C. Montgomery by Stuart Macquarie, Mr. Mortimer by John Shedden, C.I. Shade by Alan Sharp, and D.S. Charlotte Neville by Louise Beattie. Other parts were played by members of the cast. McEnroy's Point was written by Peter Turnbull, dramatised by Stephen Mulrein, and directed on location in Glasgow and in our Edinburgh studios by Hamish Wilson.